Welcome to Paint Ed. PCA provides painting contractors with connections they need to grow their business. To find out more and to become a member, go to pcapainted.org. Find more great content like this on PCA Overdrive. A subscription to the platform is included with membership. For all you non-members out there, sign up for our free trial. PCA Overdrive is available on the Apple Store and Google Play. In today's podcast, we feature an episode from Paint Ed with Torlando. In this episode, Torlando meets with Jason Phillips of Phillips Home Improvement to talk about developing a leadership team. This episode is brought to you by Pass Payments and Norton Abrasives. Welcome to Paint Ed. My name is Torlando and I'm your host. Folks, I am so excited to have you here today. I've got an excellent guest. This guy is, we've become good friends just by going to Expo and hanging out with each other. We were down in Phoenix having a great time, going to the restaurants and talking about business, talking about life. Jason Phillips from Phillips Home Improvement is with us. Right there down in Dallas, Texas. I love this guy. He is so positive, so smart, also humble and incredibly successful. And I love surrounding myself with successful people because I just crave their mentorship. And this guy has always been a wonderful mentor to me. I brought Jason on the show because he has so much experience in the paint industry, and he also does other services, added other services to his business, and he's explored the different industries. And here's the deal. I think we have to be a little bit honest with ourselves as an industry. Compared to some of the other trades, we have a little ways to go in the development, in the sophistication of our processes and systems. There's so much to learn from other trades. And so he is going to bring some of that knowledge with us today. And we are going to talk about building a leadership team. Now, when I talk to contractors, and I know this just from being a contractor myself, that establishing that leadership team is so challenging, especially when you're going from you to maybe a couple. You've got some, crew leads out in the field, but getting that project manager, hiring those sales leaders, bringing people in the office, it's such a huge hurdle for a couple of reasons. One, because the overhead, the jump in overhead is really high. But then the other piece, I think, and we'll discuss this on the show, is that sometimes you don't know what you need them to do because you have all of the head knowledge up here and you don't have it written down and you don't have everything figured out yourself. And so it's really difficult to tell somebody else what they need to do if you're still kind of figuring that out on your own. And so many of the owners out there are just on that journey to figure that out. And it's not a bad thing if you haven't gotten there yet. It's just a hurdle that you're going to have to climb at some point if you want to grow and live, like Jason says, to live your life out loud and to have a really rich and fulfilling life. And so I'm so excited to have Jason on the show. Before I bring him on, I just want to make a comment that this show, Paint Ed, is on it's on PCA Overdrive. And if you don't know what PCA Overdrive is, it is PCA's homegrown app that contains all of the wonderful video content that is produced, not just podcasts, but we have professionally trained video series like the Trade Best Practice series, where you can give these videos to your crew in the field, the new apprentices, the folks that you're training up. You give them the video. You say, here's the task that we're going to do. I want you to watch the video. Then I want you to try it. I'm going to guide you through it, and then I'm going to inspect it. It's such a phenomenal way to help train your team up. And there's not only is there this wonderful the paint instruction, but also instruction about running your business profitably, from topics to marketing, sales, leadership, finances. There's so much content there. 200 plus hours, $499 a month for non-members, free for PCA members. Check out PCA Overdrive at pcapainted.org. All right, let's go ahead and bring Jason Phillips onto the show. Hey, Jason.
Howdy. Wow. Thank you for having me on today. What an honor.
Yeah. Oh, no. The honor is mine, my friend. The honor is mine.
I want to tell you what, man, I love listening to you speak to Orlando. I mean, you are an inspirational, intellectual speaker and very unique. I love listening to you speak and teach.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I enjoy it, at least, you know, and I hope other people do too. But it's a lot of fun. So how are things down there in Dallas? How's the weather treating you down there?
The weather is amazing. Sun is shining. It's warm. And we've had a couple little hailstorms come through, and, you know, we also do roofing, and
okay.
The industry lives or dies in North Texas based on weather events such as
yes.
hail.
Yes. So
we do the hail dance, we like to say.
Yeah. Okay. So the weather's been good to you this season so far.
Yes, indeed.
I think that should be like the you know, that should be the test of, you know, that should be the how are you doing for contractors. How's the weather? How's the weather treating you?
Yes,
it's bad. It's just been raining. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, we it can rain on Sundays and in the evenings, but we want sunshine during the day so we can get some work done.
Yeah, exactly. So Jason, I brought this up in the intro. You know, today we're going to be talking about building the leadership team. You know, you tell us a little bit about your team, and I really want to know about before you started building that team. What were some of the big hurdles that really were standing in the way of just that first start of like bringing on those first couple hires that could really lead? What was the big challenge there?
You know, that's a great question, Torlando. When I started, I'm a go-getter, a lot of energy. And I've got this attitude, like, I can do it. I can do anything. And
yeah.
I feel like I can do most anything. The problem is, as your business grows, there's too much of that. And although you could do any one of those things or any several of those things, there's not enough time in the day to do them all. And my family was missing out. I had no friends. I was working 7 days a week, you know, 12, 18 hours a day. And my business was succeeding, but my life was suffering. Those around me, especially my family and young kids, were suffering. And I came to the point, I'm like, okay, I was at a decision point. I'm like, I'm either going to pull back or I'm going to build a team.
Yeah.
And I chose at that moment, I was going to build a team. So that was the first thing, is just making a decision. What do I want from my business?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I met a guy recently, and a painter in another state. He called me and he said, yeah, I've been painting for 45 years. I'm going to die with a paintbrush in my hand. I don't want a big business. I love painting.
Yeah.
Right. And that was his vision, and he's living that. That's great for him. That wasn't for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you made that decision and you started, looking to assemble your team, where did you begin?
Well, the first thing I did is identified the things I hated doing the most.
Mm-hmm.
AKA the things I was most likely to avoid, was the worst at, and such. Mm-hmm. And so when I started my business, I did everything except the painting. I did the carpentry repairs, the sales, the marketing, the IT, the books, the phones, all of that.
Yeah.
And so as the business grew and I was succeeding with marketing and such, well, I need to hire someone to answer the phones and set appointments for me and to run the books. Now I need another salesperson. And just one by one, just started slicing up that pie to where what I was doing, where it was broad spectrum, slowly began to specialize and narrow down.
So I appreciate that you had the foresight to start with the things that you hated, because I think too many of us, myself included, I did this. I systematically delegated the things that I knew how to do the best and the things that I loved, because I didn't know how to do the other stuff. And so I was like, oh, I got to figure out how to do all this other stuff. And, you know, I have a system for the painting. I have a system for the sales. Let me hand those off. And then I was just kind of like systematically giving myself the things that I didn't like. And I ended up with only the things that I hated. I had everything else delegated, and it just wasn't a very fun job, by the end of it. So I wish I had that foresight. What do you think made you think? I mean, it sounds so obvious. You hate this stuff. Why am I going to put myself through it? I'll hire somebody else to do it.
But Well, the easiest thing to hand off was something you already had a system for.
Yeah.
Right. And that's part of one of the things that gets us started in business is our go get 'em, we can do it attitude. But the problem with that is, and this really eventually got me stuck, was I can do it. I don't need to hear from anybody else. I'll figure it out. So I was like Fred Flintstone, literally going to get a boulder and carving a new wheel every day, making something from scratch every day. And that became a limiting factor. And one day I'm like, well, why do I need to reinvent the wheel constantly? Wow, there's a wheel store over there. Why don't I go over there and find out what wheel best fits my business along with all the other parts and mix them onto my car, my vehicle, my company, so that I can get more progress. This isn't about the pride of I can do it. So there's this bravado and I've seen a lot of, not just me, I've seen a lot of other business owners deal with that. So what gets us to, you know, to first base is not going to get us to second base, to third, and bring us home where we want to go.
Yeah. And so when you first started building that leadership team, what were some of the initial false starts or hiccups that you encountered?
Mainly, not knowing for sure what I wanted. It's one of those things that sounds so simple, but it wasn't so simple to define. Okay, what do I really want this person to do? What does success in this position look like? That was one. The other one was I didn't have a system for sourcing people. I hadn't built a network of people I eventually want to hire one day. Mm. And it was like, oh man, oh, I've got too much work. I need someone. And then you end up hiring a friend of a friend of a relative of a whatever who's already unemployed. And there's probably a really good reason why they're unemployed.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody that's unemployed is unemployed for a reason, but many of them are. And then what happens is you end up bringing people onto your team that are not the people that you need.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me, how do I decide that? How do I figure that out?
Well, okay. So here's what I did. I wrote out on a piece of paper, an org chart, with me at the top. I said, okay, I need someone. I was wearing way too many hats. I was spread so thin, and I was doing at best a mediocre job at a number of things. Mm. And so I made my org chart, said, okay, sales manager. I need a production manager. I need a marketing manager. And I wrote my name in all those boxes, which is kind of like, I know a lot of listeners are doing Traction, which is the same, Wickman walks you through in the book Traction about making your accountability chart. Of course, back then I just called it an org chart. And I wrote my name and I wrote it out, said, this is my dream team. Wrote my name in all the boxes in those different positions. This is my dream team. And from there, honestly, I just prayed about it. I just said, God, These are the positions I need filled. And I ask for you to help me connect with the right people that I need. Yeah. And so from there, one by one, over the next 12 months, I had every one of those positions filled. And growth went from this. We took a steep incline over the next several years.
Kind of that hockey stick growth.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's really smart. And I remember doing that myself, just kind of like just drawing some circles or some boxes and put my name in each of them. How soon did you start with hiring those leadership people on? Like, how many people did you feel like you needed to have in the field in order to account for the added overhead that was going to come? Because you said 12 months later, you filled all those positions. That's a lot of overhead. Where were you at that point, like to be able to sustain that?
I think at that point we were doing, just under $3 million at first. Mm-hmm. And we quickly doubled to a little over 5-6 at that time. You know, and you have to ask yourself, I mean, obviously I didn't have that in the budget, but things were growing. You also have to ride that wave.
Right.
And there's times when instead of improving your lifestyle with spending your money, mm-hmm. maybe improve your lifestyle by buying your time back, investing in someone, a leader or manager on your team, that is then that's still an investment. You're going to get that back if you do it right.
Yeah. But
buying your time back. And that's one of the things I started doing, is buying my time back with these positions. So here's the way I answered that question, Torlando. I said, okay, if I hire this person today and carve off X amount of money straight from the bottom line,
mm-hmm.
and I just pay out the whole year's salary right now.
Yeah.
In 12 months, will I be able to look back and say it was worth it or not? And so I would frame my question that way. In 12 months, will this have been worth it?
Mm-hmm.
I think about the momentum, the progress, the results that they could get. And if I could answer that with a yes, then I would pull the trigger.
Yeah. Yeah. So the average PCA member is at about $1.6 million in revenue. And I think that's important to note for the listener, because, you know, we just have a community of people who are achieving things. And you've surpassed that, obviously. At that stage in the game, what do you think is the ideal leadership team? What does that look like?
So at the 1.6, 1.7 level?
Yeah.
Well, multiple people are going to be wearing many hats. You cannot, at that size, you cannot completely specialize. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, you've probably got two people, maybe three people estimating, which I hate that word estimator. That's a whole nother conversation.
A whole nother one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Salespeople. And let's, you know, aside from whatever painters, workers that you need actually on the ladder, you know, with the brush, but you've got to have some, you know, two or three salespeople. You got to have admin staff, which at that place could probably be one single person in the office. And so now you're left with managing projects and helping close the big deals and being the leader. So I would suggest that at that level, you know, you probably need two to three salespeople. The owner would act as the sales manager, have a project manager in charge of, or production manager, depending on how you run it, overseeing all of the crews. But you still have to have, so someone's got to manage sales. That's a major function. Marketing is a major function. You might be able to group those in, you might not be able to group those in. At our company, they're separate. Mm-hmm. Sales and marketing and production. And, you know, I also have an accountant and a human resource. Jennifer, maybe, I'm sure you'll meet Jennifer someday soon. She's still a multi-purpose player for us. And, but she's a huge leader here that I used, I didn't use, I brought her on because she would help us gain traction in a lot of ways in building our culture.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I do want to talk a little bit more about that, because I think that you are at your core a leadership builder, a leader of leaders, which is, I know that you're a big fan of John Maxwell in the five levels of leadership. You know, he talks about level four being that leader of leader. Before we talk about that, I want to get to that. But before we get there, we're talking about painting companies that are 1.6. Oh, nice camera cut. Awesome. I love it. Let's go to camera two. So give me a hard time here. So let's go from 1.6 to, I want to follow the years that you took to go from that range to where you're at now. How did you conceptualize changing and shifting and adapting your leadership team as you continued to see fast growth?
Well, I wish I could say I did it perfectly, but I could write a book on mistakes. I'm sure, you know, many of us could, right? Mm-hmm. So, one of the mistakes I made was I didn't have compensation plans that would scale properly. That was a huge mistake I made. And, for instance, you know, if you've got your, you know, I had a sales manager, and he was getting paid salary plus an override of the sales on the team he was leading. Well, you know, in my mind, he was going to get to six to seven salespeople that he could lead effectively and manage effectively. And then we would have to divide territories or hire an assistant and rework the compensation package. Well, as we were growing so fast and he was doing a good job, I let him go ahead and take on more than I thought he originally thought he could do. Mm. Well, as time went on, the effectiveness of the sales team decreased and his mentoring and oversight of them decreased. So our salespeople were burning through more leads. They weren't following up on the leads properly. They weren't trained properly. And so we were wasting a ton of money there. And I'm not blaming the sales manager. I'm placing the blame squarely on me. But at the time, I wasn't connected with others. And I was just stabbing in the dark at pay plans, just using my own, you know, wit and guessing on how to do it. And we did a pretty good job. It got us to where we were going, but made a lot of mistakes and lost a lot of opportunity through that mistake in particular.
Yeah. So who do you look to help you out in these areas? You said that you were stabbing in the dark, but you started reaching out and finding other people to consult with.
So I actually hired a consultant back in 2016. So that was a good ways into it. But I, you know, up until that point, I just kept my head down, my nose to the grindstone, so to say, just in my own little world. And it wasn't until 2016 that I really, you know, popped my head out and said, hey, I want to get connected with the network of people. And one of the things that I always want to do is learn from, connect to, rub up against the people who have been where I want to go.
Yeah.
Or they're already where I want to go. And I want to learn from them. Why not learn from their wins and their failures? And most all business owners are open books. They're going to tell you their wins, their successes, because there's a lot of pain. And, you know, they don't want you to go through that pain too. And if they can help add a little value to you and you can use their advice and put it into action, that adds value to them, knowing that they were of value to you. And so just connecting with others, and you know, the painting industry is, as you mentioned, not extremely sophisticated, organized in the way they run the businesses. And even from the way the manufacturers support support the contractors. When you go into other companies or other industries that are similar, such as window replacement, you know, bathtub shower replacements, roofing, there's a lot more organization there. And you can learn a lot from those companies, although they're selling a different product.
Yeah.
Their sales process is the same. Their customer is the same. There's so much, like 90% of it is all the same. And so just learning from and gleaning from people that have gone before and have done what I want to do.
Yeah. What are some of those things that, that other industries are doing, especially in that, what you just said with the vendor relationship and the organization of companies, what are they doing that we're not doing?
Well, you see a lot of industry manufacturer training events that are hosted and paid for. I'm not saying there's none of that in the painting industry, but there is a lot more of that in other industries. How about co-op marketing? How much of that do you see in the painting industry? Not a lot.
You're right.
And there's a ton of that in other industries. So
right,
the support in there, especially, you know, a lot of these things are dealer networks. You're selling a particular brand. They will send people out to train your people or, you know, take you, bring you into their headquarters to train. And, you know, Sherwin-Williams does some of that more than the others I've experienced, but nothing compared to the level of other industries.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that sounds about right, because, you know, I had a really strong connection with a Anderson Window, you know, local provider. They do the installation and they also sell the windows. And I mean, they were, you know, an independent company, but I mean, they might as well have been an Anderson Window company. I mean, like the co-branding, the tightly knit co-branding that went on in that company, they might as well have been a franchise almost, you know, but they're not. But like that, there's that closeness, right?
Yes, indeed.
So okay, so that's one thing that we can learn from that. And then the idea that yes, they're coming in and training. And you know, I think to be fair, you know, the PCA is doing a tremendous amount of work and effort to bring that training, you know, to the industry, which is phenomenal. What else can we learn, do you think, from other industries?
The first thing I would say is together, someone has solved our problem across the country. Mm-hmm. And these events, like during COVID, we weren't able to get together. That was terrible. I loved getting together and sitting around the lunch table or the mastermind table or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if the guy or the gal sitting across from you started a year ago or 50 years ago, or if they're a, you know, a $200,000 company or a $20 million company, there is something you can learn from every single person. There are golden nuggets that you can learn. And if we can continue to get together as an industry and share knowledge, that is a great start, is sharing that knowledge. And that's what I love about the PCA Expo.
Yeah.
Getting together and you know, oh, wow, you deal with that? Well, here's what we did. This is what helped us. So I think the peer-to-peer is huge. Of course, you know, there's a lot of times there's people that are trying to teach that don't know how to do, and don't ever listen to those people. You know, I want to learn from business people who aren't teaching theory. I want to learn from business people that have battle scars.
Yeah.
That have been through it, that have conquered. Those are the people that I want to connect with. And I think that's the best thing that we could do as an industry is stay together. Of course, when we get together, you know, this paint manufacturer, all of their training is going to be centered around selling their brand.
Right.
And everybody's got their own opinions about what type of paint that they're going to use. And where I feel we're lacking is the painters don't need training on how to paint a house or whatever they're painting. Okay. What they need is they need to learn about leadership and building a business. Okay. At the end of the day, you know, no one ever did anything great. If you want to build your business, you have to build a team. And the skill set for building a team is completely different than from painting a house or even running a paint crew.
Right.
The skill set is totally different. You may be an expert over here, but if you want to build your business, you start off as an amateur and you have to have the mindset of, hey, what got me here isn't going to get me where I want to go. I need to learn. I need to improve. And it really starts with taking personal responsibility that I'm in control. I'm the leader of the ship and yeah. I'm going to improve me.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are some of the qualities that you feel like are absolutely essential to become a leader of leaders?
To become a leader of leaders, the number one thing is integrity. If your followers or the people you're leading, they don't have to always like what you say, but if they don't believe what you say, you have no credibility and you're just going to be, you know, taking a walk. It comes down to trust. Trust is the currency of business between us and our customers. It's also the trust on our teams, and it is the foundation of building a leadership team. You take a team that doesn't trust one another, and everybody is going to be fighting. They're not going to be clear and transparent, and honest with each other to talk about the real issues. They're going to be bargaining for their, you know, for their department or for their team rather than the betterment of the company. So the trust is absolutely vital. Now, having said that, you need to create an environment as a leader that your people can be transparent with you and still be safe.
Right.
That your people can come in and say, look, Torlando, man, I totally dropped the ball. Whatever that is.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what I've always told my people is look, mistakes happen, whether it's a mistake, a mess up, whatever it is, bring it to me and together we can deal with this. But if I have to hear about it from a third party, it's going to be way worse.
Yeah, right.
Let's just be honest and open with one another.
Yeah. I think safety in the workplace, just like emotional safety in the workplace, is as important as physical safety. I think it comes up more frequently. I think that your emotional safety is at risk more frequently than your physical safety is. And I think that a lot of leaders don't recognize how much the power that they hold, how that creates an unsafe setting. You know, I'll maybe try to think of an example here, or maybe just expound on that idea. You know, power comes from position in a lot of ways. And if you are the one signing the paycheck, there's this baseline fear that if I mess up, or if I speak my mind too much, or if I get in too much of a disagreement, that I will lose my job, right? There's just this fear that if I push too hard, my whole world can come crashing down. And that fear limits the amount of openness that we get from our people. And as a leader, you just don't, you're not aware of it. You don't see it. You think that you're open. You think that you're creating a safe space, but all too often you're just not. And that is limiting your people from actually growing and telling you that you have no clothes. The emperor has no clothes, right?
You're absolutely right. It is so important. You know, the fear of losing your job if you do something wrong. We're fans here. I'm a proponent of having regular conversations with your team. Regular. You shouldn't wait for quarterly or annual reviews to tell someone they're winning or losing.
Yeah. You know,
if they're slightly off track, then if there's violated expectations, you owe it to them as a leader to identify that and discuss it with them sooner rather than later, because the quicker you address it with them, the easier it is for them to fix and the less irritation and problem it is for your company. Right. So having that clear communication, and they need to feel like they're they're a true team member. You know, they say, so many people say, oh no, don't be friends with your employees. Don't be friends with your employees. Well, I understand why they say that, but I disagree with it. Mm. The problem is the perception, and what normally happens is if you're close to your employees, maybe you're not strong enough to tell them the truth and to lead them and to fire them if necessary. Okay. Mm-hmm. But we have a term here on at our company, and we took the word team and family, and we put them together into a silly word called teamily. Mm. We work together like a team, but we care for one another like a family, and we put that together. And we, you know, if I truly care about someone, I am going to find a way to tell them the truth. And, yeah. And so there's this, okay, over here on the pendulum. Okay. I'm over here and you're just an employee, get results. I don't care. I'll fire you. Okay. Yeah. That's one side of it. Then you've got this other side that is, oh, hey, we're buddies. We're having a great time at work. You love me. I get great reviews from you, but we're not getting any results.
Right.
Because I can't hold you accountable, which is a whole nother story.
Yeah. Yeah.
For another time. But not in between those two. I think past way over to the other side is I'm going to care about you as my teammate and our team so much that I'm not going to be, allow things that need to be discussed to go undiscussed.
Yeah.
And that's a key trait of a leader, is the ability to have crucial conversations, which happens to be an amazing book that I recommend to all leaders, mm-hmm. along with a companion book called Crucial Accountability. These books will literally give you tools on how to have better conversations in every area of your life, not just at work, not just with your boss, not just with your peers or your employees, but with your spouse and your children. And if you are a person that wants to be a better leader, and I hope you are, those are two amazing resources that will up your game.
Yeah. That idea of, you know, I've always thought that the idea of family in a business was maybe a little hokey. But what you're kind of making me, what's really kind of popping out here is the family dynamic, in that you are going, families have those conversations. Families are not afraid of confrontation with each other. And it's because you're stuck with each other. You know, it's like, you're not going to all of a sudden not be family. That's your brother, right. It's just like, you're going to say what's on your mind because you can't live with it any longer. Right. And you're going to have to live with it. And so what I like about the idea of bringing in pulling that into the team dynamic is that I think it says, hey, look, it's going to take a lot for this relationship here to be severed. So we're going to be able to have these types of conversations and get through stuff. Because we're together, like this is it. And that's, and I'm not saying don't fire people, but there's an element of, if it's hard to get fired, then that's where openness, honesty, vulnerability can actually make a home.
Absolutely. You know, how about there's people, and this breaks my heart when I hear this happening. I call a meeting with someone, and after they go, oh man, I thought I was going to get fired today. The very thought that was the tension that was building in them as they're walking to my office kills me. Yeah. And so I think there's two ways to help combat that. One is that you have a clear, progressive discipline policy that everybody understands. It's one thing that it's written down, but it's another thing that they understand. Hey, when there's an issue, here's how we handle it. Mm-hmm. And the other one is I generally try to start those conversations by saying, hey, I've got something. I want us to work through this. I've got an issue I want to talk about, and I need you and I to work together to solve this problem.
Yeah.
And just kind of build a bridge initially rather than, you know, think it's going to explode on them.
Yeah. Yeah. So as you're developing that leadership team, how much time do you put into this? Because I think that there are a lot of business owners who have this impression that if they build a business, and they build a system and they hire a bunch of people to run it, then that means that they can go vacation for half of the year and have a business that's functioning and running, and that somehow a service company can become this passive income tool. And I don't think that you and I are a little bit on the same page that's maybe not why we should be completely in business. And that's probably not completely real for a service-based company. Tell me, how involved are you with your leadership team?
I spend approximately 50% of my time in various meetings with my leadership team. Leadership development, solving problems, level 10 meetings. Mm-hmm. Approximately 50% of my time is spent developing them and helping clear the roadblocks so that they can do their job.
Yeah. And why do you think that that's important? Like, what's your advice to leaders who are trying to balance that? Like, they do want the freedom, because, you know, I mean, why, you know, run a business without the ability to have a little bit of freedom over your life? But what can you say to leaders to help them figure out how to strike that balance?
The balance between,
between freedom and being involved in those meetings. So you said you spend 50% of your time. Is that 50% of your workday, 50% of your time period?
50% of my workday.
Yeah.
Yes. And so if you never give someone an opportunity, you never extend trust, you're always going to be doing everything yourself. And like we talked the other day, you know, the wheel is spinning, but the hamster is dead.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to burn out. You have to understand that handing something off to someone is a risk. And yes, they could fail,
mm-hmm.
but give them something that where they can fail in a safe environment and you can help them learn from that. You know, it's one thing to trust someone with brain surgery that's never touched it. It's mm-hmm. another thing to touch someone or to trust someone to run one of your business processes or handle a difficult, highly sensitive customer.
Ah.
it's not the same as brain. You know, you make a mistake in brain surgery, someone's dead.
Yeah.
And you have to let people make a mistake, but then you have to coach them through so that they don't continue to make that mistake later. Now, this freedom, if we don't create a vacuum, people won't rise to fill it.
Mm-hmm.
If we are the owner that's always there, we're the earliest to work, we're the hardest worker, we're the latest one there, working every Saturday, whatever, then they're just going to let you do it. You're the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you've got to say, hey guys, I need some help. Someone needs to take care of that. And there's a mindset shift of, wow, well, I don't feel like I'm being a good leader because I'm not leading by example.
Yeah.
As a leader, yes, you do want to lead by example, but you have to get results through the actions of others. And your job as a leader, that mindset shift is helping going from doing the job to managing the process or the people that are doing the job. And you've got to give it to them. And back to the old Pareto, the 80-20 rule. Mm-hmm. You know, if they can do it at least 80% as good as you can, give it to them. Because now they're going to be able to have more attention and focus, and they're going to go well beyond 100% and probably do it 120% as good as you were doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And so what does the other 50% of your time look like in your work day?
The other 50% of my time would be dealing with, so I spend my time leading the leadership team, dealing with high level, relationships. Like I'm the one that manages our relationship with all of our primary vendors. Mm. And for instance, we are in the process of purchasing a building, a new building for a company. I'm the one that's handling that. And I'm the one that's looking down the road for where we're going to be. You know, my leaders and managers are looking, you know, say for instance, quarterly, monthly, weekly. I'm looking, you know, next year, next 5 years. And I'm working on those types of tasks that are not in the daily routine. I am not in the workflow of anything that happens daily regarding marketing, leads, sales, production, customers, collections, none of that.
Yeah. And I think that mindset shift of the time factor of I'm looking at the year, I'm looking at the next 5 years. I think that is a hard thing to get out of or to get to when you are just thinking about, you know, how are we going to get these jobs done this, you know, this month? How are we going to get cash in the door this month, this week? It's a really difficult thing to get to. So with your team, your leadership team, what kind of training do you put them through in order to handle some of these more high level things? I mean, cause you're talking mile high. And you know, you're talking about buying buildings and these top vendor relationships, but how do we train people to think in terms of the quarter and the year and not just the next handful of jobs?
Well, one is creating clarity of vision. And, you know, we live in a quarterly world and we set quarterly goals and we track, we have certain goals and certain things, metrics that are weekly. You know, for instance, you're a salesperson, you're making commission. You get paid weekly on that. Mm-hmm. But for our managers and our leaders, we've connected, compensation rewards with monthly and quarterly objectives or metrics or numbers, whatever. And it helps everybody. It's like when you connect compensation to desired outcomes and results, it's whether you say you're a money motivated person or not, it's mm-hmm. this little voice that's always speaking back there to you, helping guide you in mm-hmm. the right direction. And so part of it is just, you know, that will help get anyone on board. Okay.
Yeah.
That's just one piece of it. Creating clarity about, hey, this is what our next 5 years looks like. Okay. This is where we want to be in 5 years. And when I paint the picture of here's our 5-year vision, I want every one of my teammates to see themselves as a part of that vision in an expanded role over what they're doing right now. I want them to see opportunity that their life is going to be better as this company grows and makes more profits. Mm-hmm. The way we say it here is we have three pillars for success. And the first one is we have to have a thriving culture, a place where it's safe to come to work, where you love the people you work with. Of course, you're challenged, but we share the blood, sweat, and tears together. Okay, yeah. We have to have a thriving culture. The second one is we have to have wowed customers, not customers that are just happy or just happen to pay their bill begrudgingly. We mm-hmm. need our customers to be raving fans that are going to sing our praises. When we're done, they're going to tell a story after we finish. What story are they going to tell? And that's going to make a difference on our bottom line. And then the next thing that we need for our future success is we have to have profits. Profits help us weather a COVID year. Help us weather the winter. Profits help us finance the future. And that when you paint that picture, people start thinking, yeah, the company does need to make profits. I want to be a part of this vision. So now you've got that five-year vision, then you just break down, okay, so where can we be in 1 year from now? Where do we need to be in 1 year from now? Okay, let's break that down. What do we need to do in the next 90 days to make sure we're on track? Okay, so then 90 days, that's 13 weeks. We break our 90-day goals down into 13 weekly reportable metrics of progress at that point. So you know if you're hitting your weeklies, you're on track with your quarterly.
Yeah.
So that those are some of the things we do to help our managers and leaders get their head out of the trenches. You know, they need to have their head in the trenches a lot, but they need to poke their head up and look and make sure they're headed in the right direction on a regular basis.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's so awesome. So if we're doing all of this right, and we're building that leadership team, we're giving them the key metrics for success, and we're actually present and coaching them continually, spending half of our time, actually leading our leadership team. What does life look like on the other side of the bridge?
Oh, well, I love what I do. I love my life. I am passionate about people. And I wasn't passionate about painting when I got in the painting business, but I was passionate about helping people. Well, when we renew and restore someone's home, make it beautiful again, we're helping people, aren't we? Mm-hmm. And now my day-to-day isn't personally doing that. My day-to-day is my own team. And so now when I'm not working, what am I doing? I am living my life, spending time with the ones I love. I call it living out loud, pursuing mm-hmm. your purpose. You know, my company, my business is a huge part of what I do and who I am, but it is not me. My business is not my calling. My business is a tool that's going to help me serve my purpose and my dreams and my calling in life. And guess what? It's going to improve a lot of other people's lives at the same time. Mm-hmm. That share that same that can benefit as well. And we have 5 children, and absolutely love spending time with the family. You know, mountain biking, working out, swimming. Mm-hmm. I like all kinds of different cars and stuff, so working on cars, driving cars, mm-hmm. Hanging out at the swimming pool, love doing that stuff. I spend, believe it or not, a fair bit of time. I have focus time, because when I'm at my office, I'm engaged with people the whole time.
Yeah. And
I need that time where I can focus. Well, as long as the weather is good, my focus time happens on my patio with my computer, my iPad, and the birds chirping in the background.
Mm. Beautiful. Beautiful. Jason, thank you so much for being on the show today. Where can people connect with you? Where should I send them?
Well, of course, there's my company's website, PhillipsHomeImprovements.com. Or if you're on Facebook, you just look me up. It's Facebook.com/PhillipsJasonW. I would love to connect with anyone. I'm passionate about people. I'm passionate about developing leaders, especially business leaders. So I'd love to connect with you.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, Jason. I'm going to send you backstage and close out the show. All right, there we have it, Jason Phillips. Man, what a high energy, awesome, good natured, just good human. I mean, just imagine what it would be like to work on his team. Imagine what it would be like to have somebody who you could walk in to the office and say, "I got this problem," and he's not going to say, "Oh, here we go again." He's going to say, "What is it? Let's solve this together. Let's find a solution together. You don't have to be afraid of your employment." I would love to be that kind of leader to my people. Such an inspiration to talk to him. Couple things about the PCA, things that are super, super cool. There are so many people like Jason. He's fairly unique, but there are so many people who are just phenomenal business leaders, phenomenal people who are willing to share their expertise, share their battle scars, as he said. We have the Ask a Peer Network that you could be a part of, where you can actually connect with other business leaders in the PCA and feed from their aura and all their knowledge and wisdom. Such a great place to find a mentor. Do me a favor and go to Facebook and join our group, the Paint Ed group. There's always great discussions about paint on there. Subscribe to the show, download Overdrive, and join our wonderful community of paint contractors. Love y'all. Have a great rest of your week, rest of your day, rest of your quarter, and we will see you next time.
Paint Ed podcasts are produced by the Painting Contractors Association and is made possible by members and industry partners. To find out more about upcoming education opportunities or for more information about joining PCA, visit pcapainted.org.